You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today is going to be an interesting show because I was planning to have an entirely different show today. I was going to really discuss what the testimony of the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, who was testifying before Congress, both the House and the Senate, for 2 days about what was happening in the economy and what the Federal Reserves, which is the United States Central Bank, was going to most likely do in the upcoming months. And in terms of monetary policy, and I was going to follow that with what's happening with the congressional oversight investigation and hearing and testimony by IRS employees in regards to the so-called IRS scandal, where they targeted conservative groups, Tea Party groups, that were applying for 501c4 exemption letters. I've scrubbed that at the last moment. And the reason why, if you listen to my show, you know I listen to talk radio, and I really sample. I don't listen to one entire show every day. A matter of fact, I listen, you know, bits and pieces, if you will, of probably three or four. And that includes Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, Mark Levin in the morning. I usually start the morning listening to, well, actually, the morning in terms of late night from 12 to 4, I usually listen for the first 30 minutes to an hour, sometimes depending if it's really interesting. I'll go for several hours, and that's the Charlie Jones show on CBS 1080 here in Dallas. So I listen to a lot of talk radio, and I also listen to Mike Savage, for example, and Larry Kudlow on Saturdays, really to see what they're covering, how they're covering it. And everyone has their own style, and believe me, all those six, and there's another show I also listen on Saturday in the mornings, the Car Guy show, and his name escapes me, from 8 to 1. So if you're interested in cars, buying a new car, that's the show to listen to. But what I like about that show is that he has historical pieces. He has pieces on segments on, for example, music, what's happening in music, what news stories were not covered. So although it's primarily about cars and related issues such as the price of gasoline, I usually listen to that. I don't listen to the whole show because I'm not in the market for a car. I've leased my car and will probably not be in the market for at least another 2 years, if not longer. So I'm not going to listen for 5 hours, but I will try to catch his segments that he has, for example, usually around 9 o'clock to 9:15 on history. It's a terrific show, and I'm embarrassed that I forgot his name. But it's on 570. So the point I'm trying to make is I listen to a lot of talk radio. And with the exception of the two Dallas shows, they're mostly nationally syndicated. And one of the reasons I listen to it, because this is a college radio station that's on the air in the sense it's on the internet, it's not broadcast over the air either locally. Some radio stations, college stations, actually will broadcast over the air. I believe the New York University, if you're from New York City, I've listened to their radio shows, and most of them, college radio is largely playing a music and some commentary on the music. And that's really the same in the Richland College KDUX radio. Most of the students that are doing shows are playing music that they like and then giving some commentary. And we had also one student, for example, was really into movies. He's seen a lot of movies, so he's giving his commentary on films or movies that he's seen. It's not. And in those types of shows, you really don't need call-ins. Talk radio, I really think if I were giving a commercial show, I would welcome call-ins on the subjects that are stories, news stories that I'm covering. But we're just not equipped for that. And really, even with local shows, unless you have a large audience base, you're not going to get a lot of calls. Now, that's not the case if you're nationally syndicated and have an audience of a million plus. You're going to get enough calls to at least light the board. However, for everyone that calls, there are probably eight or nine that don't get on the air for the simple reason they want to talk about stories that whoever is presenting or hosting the show does not want to cover. Now, that's a long introduction, but why I'm getting into this, I've listened to all these shows, and the call-ins keep coming on the George Zimmerman verdict. And there are a lot of reasons for it, because the you have people in the media that are heavily invested, spent hours and hours on going on the trial and what's happening in it, and now they really didn't get the verdict that they were expecting. Now, I looked at some of the evidence, and I quickly determined this should never gone to trial. This was strictly a case of self-defense, and that's exactly what the jury found. And I'm going to, so to make a long story short, I'm going to cover some of the aftermath of the George Zimmerman verdict, as well as some of the details, and try to cut to the chase as to, you know, what I think's going on. And I think you're going to hear more. I don't think it's dead at all because, for example, Al Sharpton is really, and he's what I call a race racketeer. He also has his own television show, and he's really in the tank big time for Obama. He won't say anything negative about our president, and that's not me saying it. That's our people on the left are saying the same thing about Al Sharpton. Well, he's flaming, trying to have what I call rallies. I think he's inciting riots in 100 cities across this nation over the verdict because he doesn't like the verdict. He thinks it's a racist verdict. No, it's not. And if you listen to the people that actually were on the jury, one of them did give an interview. Race did not, believe it or not, did not enter into this verdict at all. And the one juror that did go public and was interviewed made the point this was strictly a self-defense case. And that's what the defense attorney was saying. And that's the way I felt. Because I'll get to the essential point. And people just don't want to recognize this, especially those that think that this was unjustified. You cannot go up to an individual, any place in the United States, including Dallas, punch him in the nose, then get on top of him and beat them. That in and of itself is a crime. Doesn't matter what race you are, you can't do that. That'll probably be battery and it'll be a felony. Depends how severe it is. And that's the point that needs to be hammered and hammered and hammered. It almost does not matter what preceded it. The moment Trayvon Martin hit George Zimmerman in the nose, and he did, the evidence clearly supports that, and then he got on top of him and beat him, and there are photographs. I have them I have several segments on this, and on I believe it's the very first segment, I have pictures of it, pretty sure. No, maybe it's the second segment. And let me, before I forget, for new listeners, the way you listen to this show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll have a link to the most recent shows. And below that, you have a complete archive, with I think the exception of the very first show, of all the shows, my past shows. This is my 117th show. I've been on the air for going on 2 years and probably have upwards of 350 hours, broadcasting hours, and I've gotten better and gotten more confident about it. And if you listen to past shows, one of the reasons I didn't know I could do this. So one of the reasons I enrolled in their program, as well as started to give the shows to see, could I do it? Because if you, it's just a word, I'm not reading from anything. There's no script here. Television, for example, is tightly script. I've done a little television here in the program where you're reading a script on a teleprompter. And that's typical for most, if not all, of your commercial televisions, you know, with the exception where you're interviewing somebody. And even there, it's somewhat scripted because you have questions. That's not the case with talk radio. None of the people on talk radio seldom read because it loses audience. Even I'm a fairly good reader and can do it, even a cold reading, but that quickly turns off the audience. The point I'm trying to make, I have to talk. Any talk show radio host has to talk, usually several hours if they're doing a talk show. Now, the advantage commercial radio has where you have successful programs is you have advertising, so you have breaks during the hour. We have no advertising. Plus, you have people calling in on the topic under discussion. And what I'm noticing from listening to the successful commercial radio shows, people are continuing to call in about the George Zimmerman verdict, both pro and con. People thought that was completely justified, understand it, and usually black people calling in upset about the verdict. What surprises me, if you do a little bit of digging, not a lot, I'm not saying you got to listen to the entire trial, and that's available on YouTube. If you have a lot of time to kill, it's somewhat boring and repetitive. You'll quickly determine that I think the jury decided the case on the merits. And just so you understand, I really think I had no dog in this hunt. I really could care less which way it went, other than the fact that whatever the jury decided was fine by me. And what the jury did decide, they acquitted George Zimmerman of all charges. He was, I really think, overcharged with second-degree murder. I really think there was not a prayer that George Zimmerman was going to be convicted of that. But they could have convicted him, or I think the prosecution had a much better chance, not much better, but a little bit better chance of manslaughter. The problem there is, if you actually read the law, they couldn't convict him of that, and that's what the jury found. They really were paying attention during the trial, and they deliberated for over 17 hours. They asked clarification of what the usually juries are charged with, and they unanimously, 6-0, acquitted George Zimmerman of all charges. And I was not surprised about that, because the last show on Friday, I had a segment on this, and I said, I think he's going to be acquitted. And he was. I'm glad for him, but I really think none of this should happen, for the simple reason, all Trayvon Martin had to do was walk home. Walk home, and he'd be live today. Or run home if he felt threatened. He did neither of that. He circled around and then approached George Zimmerman and asked him, do you have a problem? And Zimmerman said, no, I have no problem. And then hit him in the face, hit him in the nose. At that point, it went downhill from there. Because what happened is he gave Zimmerman a bloody nose. And I haven't been in many fights, and usually when I was trying to recollect how many. And probably four or five, and usually I was very young in this situation, and I usually knew the person. It wasn't a stranger, and it was quickly over. But if you get hit in the face or in the nose, usually you're going to bleed, and that's what happened to Zimmerman, and the nose swells up. I have a broken nose right now, or what's called a deviated septum. And I'm sure that was the result of a fight. It wasn't diagnosed at the time. Only later did I find out that I have it. And I thought back, it was probably somebody hit me in the nose, and I didn't realize it. And there's usually bleeding if that happens. Not all cases. But the problem is you cannot go up to a stranger and assault them. And what's surprising, you could go to YouTube. And I did this in researching the show. And what I need to point out is I give you all my notes. Besides the links to this show and past shows, for every segment that I'll be discussing today, I have selectively provided you with a number of videos, photographs, articles covering various aspects of whatever segment I'm discussing. Now, I have four segments today, and the first one deals with Trayvon Martin's, and that was the gentleman that was killed, girlfriend, Rachel Gentel, that was literally on the phone with Trayvon Martin literally a minute before he was shot. She had just hung up and found out 2 days later, according to her, that he was killed a minute after she hung up. Now, what was interesting, she was on the Piers Morgan show, and it was an exclusive interview. And the speculation is she was probably paid, the question is how much, I think anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000. Maybe more, who knows? And that's a rating builder, and that's one of the problems with the media. They selected this case, and they wouldn't let go, and got a lot of people interested that really would never be interested. Just so you understand, the police chief of the city in which this crime occurred, and this is several weeks after the killing of Trayvon Martin, notice I didn't say murder, was pressured, or they tried to pressure him, to arrest him. And he told the politicians that were trying to pressure them, there isn't probable cause. All the evidence shows that this is self-defense. He shouldn't have gone to trial. That's the police chief. And they did their separate investigation. And he was vindicated by the jury's verdict, because you had eyewitnesses saying it was Trayvon Martin that was on top punching George Zimmerman. And you have photographic evidence of George Zimmerman in a police car with his nose swollen and bloody, as well as testimony by the police that they treated him for injuries on the back of the head, which is consistent. Those injuries are consistent with the prosecution's own witness said what was happening, namely that Trayvon Martin was hitting George Zimmerman in the head and pounding his head into a cement sidewalk. And that seems to be ignored by a lot of the people. They want to get into, well, George Zimmerman should never got out of his car. Excuse me. He was a neighborhood, crime watch. He wasn't on duty. What happened was he was going to the store, driving to the store, when he saw George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, behaving what he thought was suspiciously. And he called the cops, which is what you should do. And I want to emphasize that. If I see someone that I think is acting suspiciously, namely he's looking at a lot of houses, he's not going about his business. You know, most people, I live in a similar, now they're not houses, they're an apartment complex, but over 500 units. If I see someone that's, for example, at a door and not getting in and repeatedly at it, I might think he's breaking in. I might call the cops if I don't know the person. And remember, when you're dealing with a 500 units, you probably don't know many of the people there. But I think George Zimmerman, in my opinion, did the right thing. He called the police and reported it. And they asked him questions. And he had drive past where Trayvon Martin was. As he was reporting this to the police department, the local police department, several minutes later, guess what? Trayvon Martin goes past and keeps on going. He's still talking to the police, and they're asking him questions about it. What's your phone number, sir? Where do you live? What is this person doing? You see, there was plenty of opportunity for Trayvon Martin to go home. And if he had, he'd be alive today. And you would never have known his name or George Zimmerman's name. Instead, he continued to act suspiciously. He went around. Initially, he was going in the direction to where his home was. He was on the street where his home was, but several blocks away. He cut behind a house, double back, and then approached. What happened is George Zimmerman got out of his truck because police dispatcher, the non-emergency dispatcher, wanted to know, was asking about where he located in terms of streets. So he got out of his truck, was looking for a street sign to tell the dispatcher what street he was on, because he's on a different one than where he was initially when he called in. It was at that point that Trayvon Martin approached him, asked him, "Do you have a problem with me?" And when George Zimmerman said, "No, I don't," hit him in the face. Now, why do you think Trayvon Martin would do that? Well, what you need to do is listen to his girlfriend describing their telephone conversation. Trayvon Martin describes George Zimmerman as a creepy-ass cracker, and that's cracker with an A. He thought he was probably either a policeman or a security guard. He was close. George Zimmerman was a neighborhood watch person, these crime watches, and that's why he was watching him, and that's why he was following him. Keep in mind, there had been several break-ins in this housing complex, and that's why they formed a volunteer neighborhood crime watch to look out for suspicious characters, if you will. And you got to keep in mind, it was fairly dark, and that needs to be emphasized. Yeah, they had street lights on, but it was still in the nighttime when this was occurring. The overwhelming point the takeaway from this whole situation is, you do not attack people. You don't go up to someone and punch them. And you can find videos on YouTube where that's done. There's one I came across doing research for this. A bus stops. This is commercial bus line. I believe it's in Baltimore, Maryland. A fairly tall black guy gets on the bus. And this is all video. They have a video camera right there. This is a fairly crowded bus. There are people on the bus. The gentleman pays his money and proceeds to walk down the aisle, but he doesn't walk very far. Sitting on the left-hand side, and you've been on these buses where people can, you have two types of seats. Some are like in rows. Others are long, like a bench where a number of people can sit. Well, right near the bus driver, up front, is an older blind woman. She cannot see. She's just sitting there, minding her own business. And this black guy, heavy set, muscular, proceeds to beat this blind woman. Your mouth just falls open. Now, this black guy has mental problems. Fortunately for the woman, a number of people jump up and try to stop this guy, and this guy is big and muscular. It took several people to stop him. Yeah, the gentleman committed a crime big time, and there are several people that came to the rescue. And fortunately, the woman, yes, she was injured, but it wasn't serious. And that's just one instance of this, because I was looking for videos where people were attacked. A second one I ran into was a teacher. This was in I forget what city, but it was in an urban situation. You had a teacher walking, I believe, to his car through an alley between two buildings. And he was coming from the school, going, as I understand it, to his car, had to cut through this alley. There's some teenagers, about a dozen of them, walking the opposite way towards him. Suddenly, one of these teenagers hauls off and hits this teacher in the face, in the nose. And the guy's next to a wall, and his head hits the wall. And these kids proceed like nothing happened. They laughed about it and walked on. Amazing. There's another YouTube video where a number of, again, teenagers, young people, some of them drunk, were on the street. And what happened is they had a white gentleman in his early 20s, young. They were celebrating something, St. Patrick's Day. So I really forget. I have the video there. Again, someone just hauls off and hits this person, and the guy's stunned and falls to the ground, and the group of people proceed to rob him, beat him, and take his clothes off. Ladies and gentlemen, all of those are crimes. Are crimes. We have people, black and white. Race is not the point here. We have people that are criminals that will do this to innocent victims. And that's what Trayvon Martin should have been taught by his own parents. You don't go up to a person on the street, especially a complete stranger, and hit him, period. There's no discussion here. It doesn't matter what preceded it. There's absolutely no justification for Trayvon Martin to do this, period. And that's the evidence. It's not my opinion. That's the evidence in the case. You have photographic evidence. You have eyewitness accounts. You have a complete police investigation. And you have a timeline of both George Zimmerman talking to the police, as well as Trayvon Martin talking to his girlfriend, where his girlfriend was planting the seed that this guy might be a gay rapist cop or security guard. And you better run home. Well, Trayvon Martin didn't run home. He didn't walk home. He didn't run home. He doubled back, approached George Zimmerman, confronted him, and then hit him in the face. And then proceeded to get on top of him and beat him. And his girlfriend on this television show, and I have the clips. It's unbelievable. Listen to this lady. She said what Trayvon Martin did was give him an ass whipping, what she called a whoop ass. He whooped ass, and she kept on saying it, whoop ass, he whooped assed him. In other words, he beat him, and she's smiling about this. He didn't mean to kill him. He wasn't gonna bash him or kill him. He was just gonna whoop ass. I guess she doesn't understand that that's wrong. Whoop ass is wrong, lady, and your boyfriend would be live today had he gone home. And she makes the point, you know, your parents teach you if you're followed by a stranger, you should run home. Walk home, run home, and tell your parents about it. That's true. That's what most people would say. The last thing you do is confront a person and compound it by punching him in the face and then proceeding to get on top of him and beating him. I don't think parents teach that. And they shouldn't teach that. Let me tell you a little story. I get my hair cut probably every six to eight weeks. And it just so happens to be a black-owned barbershop. It's in my neighborhood. It's close by, across the street from where I buy my groceries. It's convenient. I go in. Most of the customers are black. Not all, but most are. And this is several months ago. I went in. I asked for my regular barber. He wasn't there. I said, well, I need to get a haircut. And the gentleman said, well, I'll take you. I said, okay. He gave me probably the best haircut I've gotten there. And I wasn't paying much attention. But there were three kids. And they were under six or seven. They ranged probably three or four, you know, five, six. There were two girls and one boy. I think one of the girls was older. One was definitely younger. And a boy of probably 4 or 5 years old. And again, I wasn't paying much attention at all, but they were kind of roughhousing. And the boy started to hit his younger sister. And my black barber who was giving me a haircut, I didn't know, but those were his kids. And this is in the reception area. The barber chair was right across from the reception. And he yelled at the kid and said, you don't hit the girls. You don't hit the girls. Stop it. Which a parent should do. What he should have said, you don't hit people. But he was trying to get the point across, and the kid stopped immediately. I assumed he was the father, did not go up to the kid, didn't spank him. The moment his father said stopped, he stopped. You know, there's a lesson here that should be learned both by parents and their children. You do not start fights. You don't go up to, in this case, a complete stranger or anybody and hit him in the face, because that is a crime. You can go to jail for it. You know, you maybe, if it was your first offense, might get probation. And it's usually a felony. It's usually what's called battery. That's where you attack someone or assault someone. You're hitting them. You're causing bodily injury. Because that's exactly what Trayvon Martin did. And let's assume no gun was fired. Trayvon Martin should have gone to jail for that, had he lived. See, the danger is this. when you go up to someone, hit them, and continue to hit them, people will fear for their life, will fear that they might die, especially if someone has dazed you and punched you in the nose and then proceeds to hit you while you're down on the ground and hitting your head into a cement sidewalk. I would fear for my life. Any reasonable person would. And that's the standard. What would a reasonable person do in this situation? And the jury believed that George Zimmerman was in fear of his life. Think about it. There have been people killed by just one punch. For example, if you shove the nose up into the brain, that can kill somebody. That's why it is extremely dangerous to punch someone in the nose, because if you do it, there are trained martial arts experts that know that one of the things that you can do to incapacitate, if not kill, a person is to shove their nose in upwards into their brain. And that could have happened. It didn't happen in this situation. And in most situations, it doesn't. But there are people that are trained to know how to do that. Know the weak body parts. Either do it physically with their own hands or feet or legs, or do it with weapons, whether it's firearms or knives. And put yourself in George Zimmerman's situation. He was approached. You know, what's your problem? That was the question asked by Trayvon Martin. And George Zimmerman said, I have no problem. And at that point is when he was attacked. And yes, we don't have Trayvon Martin's side of the story. That's true. We would have had Trayvon Martin either walked home or ran home instead of doubling back. You need to teach your children well, that you don't start fights. You don't punch the girl, you don't punch the man. You certainly don't punch complete strangers. And the problem is, as a result of television, films, music, some people think it's entirely acceptable to do that. And unfortunately for Trayvon Martin, he thought that, and as a result, he's dead. Because what happened is, George Zimmerman correctly, or justifiably would be a better way to say it, was armed. He was licensed to carry a weapon, and he was. And because he was in fear of his life, when, according to Zimmerman here, Trayvon Martin went for or brushed toward, he had it on, George Zimmerman had the weapon on his side, you know, towards the rear. And what George Zimmerman is saying, he thought that Trayvon Martin was going for the gun. At that point, he reached for it, pulled it out, and fired once. And unfortunately for Trayvon Martin, that killed him. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why you need to teach your children well not to fight. And if you're going to fight, only after your attack. You don't do what Trayvon Martin did. He'd be alive today had he walked home or run home. Or he had several alternatives. He could have gotten off the phone with his girlfriend and called the police, 911, or whatever the emergency phone is down there. He could have done that. He should have walked away, but he could have called the police. And who has credibility here? George Zimmerman was a neighborhood watch for his community. There are a number of people in the community that did this. He wasn't on duty that night. He was going shopping when he saw Trayvon Martin. But he called the police, and that gives him a lot of credibility right there. And the cops were on their way. Now, usually the average, I just was listening to the news, the average response time, and it's going to vary from city to city and how busy they are, it's 10 or 11 minutes. Sometimes it's a lot shorter. Sometimes it's a lot longer. In Detroit, that's in the news for going bankrupt, the statistics I heard was 58 minutes. An awful lot can happen in 58 minutes. An awful lot can happen in 10 minutes. And George Zimmerman was, I didn't time it, but he was talking to the police dispatcher, the non-emergency dispatcher, not a cop, a civilian employee of the city, for a couple of minutes, given the detail. He was asked some questions. And one of the questions was, is he white, black, Hispanic? That was the dispatcher. And Zimmerman said, I think he's black. Remember, it's dark out. And Trayvon Martin was wearing a hoodie. And the dispatcher asked a couple of questions. You know, sir, what's your phone number? Where exactly are you now? Where is Trayvon Martin? They didn't know who it was. Where's this person going or heading? Now, a point that people keep going over and over, saying, well, the dispatcher said, we don't need you to follow them. Remember, and there's a good, excellent, I have links to a video that after the fact really shows you it. I definitely put it in, but it's not popping up immediately. See, I have a, okay. It's called Not Guilty George Zimmerman. Actually, there are two videos. That has a map of this complex and really in a reenactment of what happened. They also have George Zimmerman's story in his own words. What happened is the day after, he went out with the police and went over what happened. And they videoed. You see, he's cooperating with the police. He called the police. He's doing what I think someone should do. You know, if I see someone breaking in or really look acting strange, like casing the joint, when I say strange, it's not strange. If I think someone is actually looking around, seeing what homes are occupied or what apartments are, I might conclude, rightly or wrongly, that maybe this person is looking for a home or an apartment to break in. It's many years ago. I remember I was home one afternoon, and two people, a woman and a man, I heard some screaming. And not where I'm living now. I was in a complex that had about 65 units. These are like townhouses, up and down townhouses. It's usually very, very quiet. So it's very unusual for someone to scream. I opened the door, and this lady, emotionally, and they were both white, by the way, "You need to chase him. You need to chase him." I looked at her. I wasn't about to chase anybody. "You need to chase him." I said, "Chase who?" "Oh, does someone trying to break in." I didn't know this couple from Adam. What I think they were trying to break in and trying to get me, dumb me, to go chase somebody while they walked in the house and robbed it. I said, "I'm sorry, ma'am. I'll call the police if there's something wrong here, but I don't see a crime." And I closed the door and locked it because I didn't know who these two characters were. I think one of them was on drugs trying to basically rob. We had on occasion had some trucks stolen from the parking lot and some break-ins, but it wasn't a high crime neighborhood. We had some crime, but not a lot. And I didn't call the police. I didn't, because I figured if it was that serious and they saw someone, this is before cell phones, by the way, they would call the cops. I didn't see anything wrong other than this lady screaming at me, "Go chase him, go chase him." You know, my reaction, you know, go chase them yourself. They're not breaking into my house, and I didn't hear any smashing of windows breaking into my neighbors. Yeah, was these two people acting strangely, suspiciously? Yeah, I'd say they were. Someone's trying to scream, tell me to chase somebody. Yeah, that's not normal. It only happened once in over 20 years. Now, it is a tragedy. And that's the word that's used over and over again, that Trayvon Martin is dead. I'll be the first one to say it is. But had Trayvon Martin had a number of alternatives, and he'd be alive today. The biggest one is just walk home. And I have a map, and the video shows it. There's a long street, probably has, a dozen houses. And it's shown on the video where Martin home was, and coincidentally on the other corner was where Zimmerman was. Now you got to remember something, and this needs to be emphasized. Trayvon Martin and his little brother were staying, and listen to this, were staying in his father's girlfriend's house. They were visiting. Trayvon and his brother live with their mother in Miami. I need to say that again. He wasn't staying with his mother, where she normally did. He was staying with his father's girlfriend. He wasn't even staying where his father was. He was staying where his father's girlfriend was. The so-called Martin home was his girlfriend home. So he is a stranger to that area. And I live in a fairly large 500-unit apartment complex. Believe me, I only know or aware of half a dozen people that live there. And it's the ones immediately around where I live. I don't know the other people in the neighborhood at all. And it usually takes months, if not years, before you do. Now, what's the difference between where I live and where Zimmerman and Martin lived. My apartment complex is patrolled by security guards, not the police, a separate security guard unit that the apartment complex has hired. And they've had several officers hired that it's a security guard job. And they're usually patrolling in the evenings, not always. Initially, when I moved in, I saw this, I think, eager beaver security guard. He was all over the place. He was driving around looking. And I assume why is they've had some problems with robberies. And remember, they have surveillance cameras all over the place. They're definitely on guard in the duty, on duty during the evening. And they wear a uniform. People know that. And they see their car and it has those special red and blue lights. And on occasion, I've seen them talking with some of the kids in the neighborhood. The biggest problem they probably have is just noisy neighbors. But getting back to the George Zimmerman verdict, you know, the big lesson that should be taken away from both by parents and kids, see what happens or could happen. If you go punch somebody in the nose and proceed to beat them, you could end up dead. And the gentleman, in this case, George Zimmerman, was justified in my eyes and in the eyes of the jury to do that. I don't know what exactly happened. I don't think anybody does. Anybody does. Because if you're in that situation, being attacked, and in my next segment I'll get into this, you're in a stressful situation and you don't know the details. And see, that's one of the mistakes, frankly, that George Zimmerman, the gentleman that was shot Trayvon and was acquitted, he went out with he fully cooperated with the police, who gave him first aid. And they took him in, detained him, questioned him, and on the following day walked the whole scene. The police concluded, both the police chief and the investigator, that it was a justified killing in the sense of self-defense. And I agree with that, and so did the verdict of the jury. Unfortunately, we have people, I call them race racketeers, that are fanning the flames, and the two biggies are Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, but really Al Sharpton, who has no credibility with me, can't accept the verdict. It's that simple. They can't. And it was only because of the pressure that they brought that he was arrested and brought to trial. Because if it was up to the police, he never would have been arrested. And it was really only because of this outside pressure that you had a trial. And I'm not going to get into the prosecuting attorney, because she never should have brought this case either. Not just my opinion. A lot of people have this opinion. But it's an opinion. And now that we spent a lot of money on both sides, both the prosecution and the defense, taxpayer money, we now know that George Zimmerman was justified in firing his weapon in defense of his life. I think what's tragic here, had Trayvon Martin called the cops, I think he'd be alive today. Got off the phone with his girlfriend that he was having a long conversation with, discussing about, he didn't know it was George Zimmerman, that he thought this guy was a creepy-ass cracker. And then his girlfriend proceeded to convince him, I think, that this guy was a gay rapist and was going to go after him and his brother at home. And as a result of that, Trayvon Martin attacked George Zimmerman. That's a tragedy. And I think Rachel Gentel, I think she knows that. He probably would have been alive today had she not said that and instead said, go home, go home. You know, a lot of wrong decisions were made here. A lot of wrong decisions. And it's sad. And it's tragic. And someone is dead. And what was really insightful is listening to this, his girlfriend saying, it's creepy in and of itself. She really loved the term whoop ass. And she says it repeatedly. Trayvon whooped ass. He whooped his ass. Yeah, and he's dead. And you got to make a distinction between whoop ass and bashing him or killing him. All Trayvon was doing was whoop ass. Yeah, that's all he was doing, and he's dead. And it's more than tragic. Didn't need to happen. I'm very much following the law and cooperating with the police. We have, I really think, and I have, introducing this segment, I'm pointing this out. There's a song, a video, it's sort of humorous. It's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. It's the very first video for this segment. And it's you. I can't play it on the air, but please listen to that. And the next song you really should listen to was a hit in the 70s by Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Young as well. Teach the Children Well. That song really applies to this entire situation. The song is terrific, and I picked one that also has the lyrics to it. And I've given you the lyrics. You need to listen to the song. You need to listen to the first video. It's kind of humorous, but the more important one is to teach the children well as teach the parents well. That song applies to this situation. It just fits. Like a glove. Now, the next segment related to this, not over with it, is robust self-defense. Florida has what's called stand your ground. And what the law says is you do not have a duty to retreat. You do not have a duty to retreat from someone that criminally attacks you. You don't. And there are 24, 25 states that have this. It's called stand your ground. The Stand Your Ground Law, and there's a map of the states that have either what's called the Stand Your Ground provisions in the law or what's called the Castle Law, where your castle refers to your home. And the reason why they have these new laws is when someone, an innocent person, is attacked by a criminal, you don't have, why most people would try to retreat. Let me first say that. You don't have a legal obligation or duty to do so. Why that's important, if you have a firearm, for example, and you're being attacked, you can stand your ground. And that protects anyone, doesn't matter what race you are, by attacks by criminals. It leads to what's called just because you fire your weapon doesn't mean you're going to kill somebody. But you have, because of that law, you have what's called justifiable homicide, where someone's killed committing a crime, and there are actually hearings. You can have a hearing just for this. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, this provision of the law really did not apply to the fact situation in this case. Why? George Zimmerman couldn't retreat. He was knocked down by a punch in the face and then was being proceeded to having a whoop-ass. He was being beaten by Trayvon Martin. He couldn't retreat. He's on his back being beaten. And when Trayvon Martin, at least in George Zimmerman's mind, thought he was going for his gun that George Zimmerman had, George Zimmerman beat him to that weapon and fired it. Again, it's justifiable homicide. It's self-defense. And that's what the verdict of the jury, six persons, decided. See, I don't consider it a controversial law at all. I think it's a good law. Why? Who usually has the weapons today committing crimes? It's the criminals. It's the gang members. That's who has the weapons. Most people are not carrying a firearm. Yeah, they're in Texas as well as many of 50 states. You can go. You have to fill out an application, get usually some training, and have concealed carry of a firearm. And you have a license. But most people do not have it. And even some that do don't necessarily carry their firearm. Fortunately for George Zimmerman, he did that day. Unfortunately for Trayvon Martin, he punched the wrong person, big time. I think his girlfriend, directly or indirectly, however you want to describe it, planted the seed that George Zimmerman was a gay rapist that was going to attack him, and instead he decided to confront Zimmerman and beat him up. And he paid the ultimate price for that, because in Florida and in many states, you can defend yourself. But the overwhelming point is, it didn't matter that Florida had this stand your ground provision in its law, because it didn't apply. That's why it was a straightforward self-defense case, and where the overwhelming, remember, the burden is on the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that George Zimmerman had either committed murder in the second degree or manslaughter. And they couldn't prove it. Why? Because the evidence photographic evidence. Evidence of people that heard the screams. Evidence of people that observed George Zimmerman. They didn't know who he was, but observed that Trayvon Martin was pounding, hitting George Zimmerman as he lay on his back. It's justifiable homicide. But we have an attorney general, Eric Holder, that says we have to repeal, we have to look into these stand down laws or stand your ground laws. And so is the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. They had a convention both here in Dallas and nationally. And they want to repeal these stand your ground laws. And Stevie Wonder is going to boycott Florida or any state that has stand your ground laws. Excuse me. Who is predominantly armed besides the police when crimes are being committed? The criminals. And we have Eric Holder and a president that are gun grabbers. If they could, they would repeal the Second Amendment today. And you couldn't have a weapon or firearm to protect yourself in your home or your castle or on the street. That's what our president and his attorney general are favoring, and they're also favoring repeal of stand your ground laws. In other words, they're on the side of the criminals, Can you believe it? They would disarm everybody, including blacks, and they would take the stand your ground defense away from blacks. And who are the primary victims of homicides? Blacks. Over half the homicides in the United States today, over half, close to 60%. And these are FBI crime statistics, not my statistics, FBI crime statistics. They break them down by race and gender. And over half the crimes in terms of homicides are blacks that are doing it to who? Other blacks. Like over 95% of those homicides are blacks killing blacks, black criminals killing blacks. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the story that the press is not covering, They don't want to discuss that. You know, Detroit, Chicago, some of your major cities, Washington, D.C., Detroit, Chicago, large percentage of blacks, highest crime, highest homicide rate. Over 500 in Chicago last year. I'm not sure who the homicide capital is today. Is it D.C.? Is it Chicago? Is it Detroit? And what's the common denominator of those three places? A large percentage black population and controlled by the Democratic Party. Really one party control. And they try to limit the citizens of the United States' ability to defend themselves. They're on the side of the criminals, on the criminal side. They're not trying to protect blacks either in their home or on the street. They're trying to disarm them, and they're trying to take away a legitimate defense should they be attacked by a criminal. What they won't discuss is overwhelming percentages of the crimes on blacks are perpetuated by other blacks. And it's primarily gangs that are out of control. That's the story that should be covered and is not being covered by the press. Instead, we've had weeks, months of covering this case. Why? Because it was a white Hispanic. New York Times comes up with this term, a white Hispanic. Race was not an issue in this case. The jurors were saying that. It didn't enter in the case, but the race racketeers were trying to make it that. That was the story. This was a white racist that went out and killed a young black man. No, he didn't. It was a black teenager that went and punched out an Hispanic, complete stranger, punched him in the face, and proceeded to beat him up. Give him a whoop-ass. That's a crime, folks. I have no sympathy for Trayvon Martin. Yes, he's a teenager, but you don't go and hit somebody. Because if you do that, one, it's a crime. You should go to jail. And I wasn't going to bring it up, but I need to bring it up. A lot of this was excluded from the trial. There was a reason why Trayvon Martin was in was staying with his father's girlfriend in his father's girlfriend house. Why? His mother lives in Miami and he was attending school there. He was suspended. Why? Let me give you one instance. Trayvon Martin, with a marker on a door, wrote the initials WTF. Trayvon Martin wasn't very smart because there was a surveillance camera there, like there's surveillance cameras all over the Richland College campus, including one right outside the door where I'm in the studio where I am right now. And guess what? The school had a guard watching these cameras. That's the way they save money and really patrol. You can patrol a wide area because you can have anywhere from 16 plus cameras on a screen, and a guard at a school saw Trayvon Martin do that. And subsequent to that, they checked Trayvon Martin's locker and his bags in his locker. And what did they discover? They were looking for the marker because they were going to expel him if they found it. What did they find instead? They found stolen jewelry. How did that get there? They found that jewelry watches, for example, were reported stolen. Now, he denied, I didn't do it. I got it from a friend. You know what the scandal was? Rather than call the police and arrest Trayvon for that alone, they let him walk. Why? They wanted to get the crime statistics down in Miami, especially related to those crimes related that happen in schools. So instead of arresting him, reporting the crime, and arresting them, they didn't do that. They suspended him. Didn't hear that in the news, did you? But that's what happened. And there's a story. Don't take my word for it. I don't think I put it in my segment here. But there's a news story on this. I'm not telling you something that, you know, I don't have the resources to dig out all this, but it's available. Go to Google and you can read the story, the background of this. You see, had the school district as well as the police in Miami did the right thing, namely had arrested him, he'd probably be alive today. But no, they suspended him. And as a direct result of that, he visited his dad's girlfriend's house, him and his brother, little brother. Now, the point of this segment, I'm tired of an attorney general and a president that are trying to take my right under the Constitution, my right to bear and hold arms, away from me. And my rights, Texas, by the way, has, if you look at the map, the reds, well, it depends on which map, I have several. Texas has both a stand your ground and castle law provisions. Some states have both. Some states have just stand your ground. A lot of states have castle laws. The problem is, ladies and gentlemen, we live in a world where we're outgunned by criminals, and many of them are gang members that kill innocent children, black and white, all ages. And instead of spending time and resources, for example, in Florida, go after the gangs, we're spending time and resources to prosecute this case that never should have went to prosecution. Never. And the only reason we did, we have outside agitators such as Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and unfortunately the President of the United States and Eric Holder that incited this case, incited this with marches. And they were successful. They had him arrested and they were trying to railroad this guy. They wanted him convicted of something, second-degree murder or manslaughter, which I believe carries upwards of a 30-year sentence in Florida. And this was a gentleman that did the right thing. He called the cops. He called the cops. What did Trayvon Martin do? He called his girlfriend and then it proceeded to attack George Zimmerman. I'm tired of politicians and race racketeers exploiting the race situation in this country. They're living in the past. They are living in the past. This is not the United States of 1950 or 1960 or 1970. Race relations have been dramatically improved. Do we still have racism in the United States? Yes, we do. But it's a lot different than it was in the 50s and 60s. And the young understand that. The young understand that. teach your parents well. Not only the teach your children, but teach your parents well. And that is part of the big problem here. It's a generational problem. And ultimately, the older folks are going to die. Most blacks and whites today get along, especially if they're younger. The generation where racism was accepted is largely dead in the United States. Not completely, but largely. The same thing can be said about anti-Semitism. It gradually faded away when it became unacceptable, both by law, by regulation, and just normal behavior. I deeply resent any politician, any individual that is exploiting this situation. And that includes the media. Shame on the media. They did not cover themselves in glory in this situation. They were going for ratings. They were going for ratings. That's why they're continuing on this by interviewing Rachel Gentile, Trayvon Martin's friend. His girlfriend, that was the person Trayvon Martin called. Apparently, they both liked each other and talked a lot. Unfortunately, on the day he got killed, his girlfriend was suggesting to him that George Zimmerman was a gay rapist. That would probably get you scared. I think it would get me scared. I'd run home. Forget about walking home. I'd run home. And while I was running, I'd be calling the cops. That's not what he did. He confronted George Zimmerman, punched him in his nose, and beat him. And now we have politicians, including the Attorney General and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, calling for the federal government to continue to investigate George Zimmerman for civil rights violations. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, if anyone has a civil rights complaint here, it's George Zimmerman against the federal government as well as the Trayvon Martin's family and the Al Sharptons and the Jesse Jacksons. They're inciting race riots. And now we have Al Sharpton calling for rallies in 100 cities this Saturday, tomorrow. I'm praying and hoping that no one shows up. I know that's not going to happen. We've already have instances where groups of blacks, primarily blacks, have been rioting, smashing windows in downtown Hollywood, for example. And these race racketeers, these outside agitators, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jones, the Attorney General, who should know better, and now the NAACP. I don't really think they care about their own people. Because it's blacks that are the primary victims of black gang homicides, as well as rapes, robberies, and attacks. Don't they care for their own people? Apparently the answer is not. They're not for the advancement of colored people. They're for their own advancement and their own power. And they're using race and the race card to stir up trouble and say, I'm the answer. Support us. Send us money. Vote us into office, and we'll protect you. They're not protecting them. They're trying to disarm them, both in terms of arms to protect themselves, whether it's a pistol, a rifle, a shotgun, knives, as well as legally in terms of a defense. Should you be attacked? I'm stunned. I wouldn't fall for this nonsense. Really, one of the primary beneficiaries of these Stand Your Ground laws in Florida are blacks. And yes, there's been an increase in justifiable homicides. Because guess what? People are standing their ground. And it is a good defense. It's really not that a radical change from the standard laws in terms of self-defense. People have a right to self-defense. And this goes back hundreds of years in the common law. If someone breaks into your house, guess what? They run the risk of being not only attacked by the person who owns the house, but killed. Killed. Why? Because if someone's trying to break in my house, whether it's daytime or nighttime, I'm in fear of my life. Forget about my property, my life. And that's what's happening. Yet we have primarily the Democratic Party would like to disarm the American citizens. Unfortunately, they have one big problem. It's called the Second Amendment. People have the right to bear and hold arms, to protect themselves. They can't, you know, if you have a problem with that as Second Amendment, we have another amendment that allows you to amend the Constitution. They don't want to do that. Instead, they do the same thing. Every time you have one of these nuts goes on a rampage, and it's usually because they're taking some kind of medication and their dosage is either increased or decreased, or they're switched to another medicine. They never really get into that or discuss that. But a lot of these, not a lot, there hasn't been that many, where you have individuals going into a school or a theater and killing multiple murders. I was trying to think of the word. Where you have more than four or five people being killed. That's the situation. Yet they think the answer is disarm everybody. That's not the answer. Guns are an inanimate object. They're not the problem. It's what's in your mind that's the problem. And what the race racketeers are doing is to inflame and incite people to thinking that they're the answer, that Whitey's out to kill young black kids. Whitey's smart enough not to do that. It's black gang members largely that are killing other blacks, and they know it. And that's why I don't really think it's working. It's working to a certain extent, but a lot of people have a little common sense and know it's nonsense. A lot of people that are calling in are older blacks that remember and have bad experience of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and maybe even today. But whatever your experience is, good or bad, has nothing to do with the George Zimmerman case. Get that through your head. I've had some very good experience with police officers, and unfortunately, on more than one occasion, I've had some bad experience. And I'm white, and I have been harassed, and I don't appreciate it. But I'm a big supporter of the police and law and order. In any organization, they're going to be a bad apple. Be the first one to say. And my advice is you're respectful. And if you think you've been treated wrong, you make your case. And guess what? Usually people will listen. And that's on one occasion I had to do it. I'm not going to get into details. But that's exactly what happened. I got a formal apology about it. Because one of the officers was clearly out of line. But you can't use your experience to then conclude that George Zimmerman is a racist and he should be put in jail. And that is what Eric Holder, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson are trying to do. He should go to jail. He killed a black man, a teenager. Yeah, a 6'1 teenager, and George Zimmerman is a lot shorter than that. And what they don't say and won't emphasize is Trayvon Martin attacked, beat up, whoop ass on George Zimmerman, to use his girlfriend's expression. And he did. And he paid with it with his life. It was justified homicide. It was a self-defense case from beginning to end. It never should have been a case at all, and would not have been a case at all if it were not for outside agitators in the form of what I call race racketeers that use this to stir up resentment against whites. And that's what they're doing. They're stirring up the black community against the white community. They're dividing this nation. It starts with the president, who had absolutely no business saying that Trayvon Martin could be my son. Mr. President, you were out of line. You should have kept your mouth shut. Shut. Because as a direct result of that, we have riots today that I'm afraid could get out of hand Saturday. I'm not predicting it. But Al Sharpton, who frankly has no credibility with me, is stirring up this. He won't let it go, and neither will your attorney general, neither will the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. They want to still pursue George Zimmerman on a federal violation of civil rights charge. It won't go anywhere. It's a joke, folks. Why? Because the FBI did an investigation, and they couldn't find any racial antipathy by George Zimmerman to blacks. Let me give you one fact that probably will change your mind, or should change your mind. George Zimmerman, who's Hispanic, not a white Hispanic, took a black girl to his senior prom. I don't know any racist. First of all, I don't know any racist, but racists generally don't want to associate with blacks at all. They certainly don't take a black to a prom. Did you know that? Did you know in the past had helped black kids with their schoolwork? He volunteered to be this neighborhood watch really a thankless task the more you think about it. And some of this was brought out in the trial. But the conclusion of the FBI, this was that no way was this a racially motivated situation. And that's why it's not going anywhere. All Eric Holder, our attorney general, is doing is pandering to the left-wing black base. That's all he's doing. He's now made two speeches doing exactly that. He knows, and I know, and anyone that follows this knows, there's no way the federal government will pursue this as a civil rights violation case, a federal case. Why? There's no evidence of it. And there's an FBI over 300-page investigation showing that. As a jury member said, race did not enter into this. It was a self-defense case. And the verdict was not guilty of all charges, a case that never should have been brought. And these are expensive cases on both the prosecution and defense situation. It's really affected George Zimmerman as well. You have black organizations, including the New Black Brothers, that really have put a bounty on George Zimmerman. They're the same New Black Panthers that our attorney general let walk on a civil rights violation case where they didn't show up and should have been convicted of. He let, our attorney general, let that group off. And let me just remind you, it was under this attorney general that we had the Fast and Furious scandal that resulted in the deaths of over 200 Mexicans. Citizens, many of them law officers or federal government employees, as well as two United States law enforcement officers. As far as I'm concerned, Attorney General Eric Holder should be fired. Now, he's not going to be fired. Why? He's the best friend of the President of the United States that agrees with him. You know, Watergate was a two-bit break-in. Nobody died. Fast and Furious, to date, there are over 200 people that have been killed by drug cartel that were using weapons that came from U.S. gun stores where the ATF approached the gun store and encouraged them to sell the arms to these people because they were going to track it. The dumbest idea, nobody in his right mind would ever approve this. Yet, our attorney general did. It's only when it came out to light and people were shocked at it that he shut it down. Unfortunately, by then, the body count was going up, up, and up. Over 2,000 weapons, pistols and rifles primarily, that were sold to what's called straw buyers in this fast and furious operation. One of the goals was to trace the weapon as it went to the drug cartel. We didn't know who they were, and they didn't put any trackers on the guns. They couldn't follow the people into Mexico, nor did they put any GPS global positioning locators in the weapons. And as a direct result of that, we've had over 200 people killed in Mexico, Mexican citizens. I guess their lives are not considered very valuable. And who was responsible for the Department of Justice, which includes the ATF, the FBI, Eric Holder? The victims of this were killed by criminals. We sort of have a pattern here. You know, I'm getting the impression that we have a president and attorney general that are more sympathetic to the criminals than they are to the victims. That's what I'm taking away from this. So what if a couple of hundred Mexicans get killed? We're trying to make the point that the guns are coming from U.S. gun stores, and we're going to use this to limit the rights of the American people to have arms. You see, the President of the United States, including as well as Eric Holder, have a deserved reputation for being what I call and others call gun grabbers. They wanted to restrict, if not eliminate, your right under the U.S. Constitution for you to have weapons, whether it's pistols, rifles, or shotguns, to protect yourselves, not only in your house, but also in your car. I ask the question, whose side are they on? Whose side are these people on? I get the distinct impression they're on the side of the criminals. They're certainly not on the side of the victims of these crimes. And it's about time that the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, start to take the interest of black people first. Because they are the primary victims of black-on-black crime, murder, homicide, rape, robbery, assault. Instead, they're focusing on this case. And yesterday in the news, Erica, I've told the police in this county not to release the evidence in the George Zimmerman. We're going to look at it, and George Zimmerman can't get his gun back or his pistol back. That's the same attorney general that is directly responsible for 2,000 weapons, pistols and rifles going to Mexico, as a direct result, used in crimes by primarily the drug cartels in Mexico to kill their own citizens as well as two law enforcement agents in the United States. Shame on him. And under any other president, this attorney general would have been fired, not asked to resign, fired. And the only reason Eric Holder is not fired, he does the president's dirty work. He's the hitman for the administration. He does what our president wants. That's why he's still there. Like I said, under any other president, he would have been fired for the Fast and Furious program. Because the buck stops, who was in charge of the Justice Department? And this was more than just the ATF's executives and the attorneys in Phoenix, Arizona that were responsible. This was multi-agency. The FBI was involved. It's like that, Holder would give the, I didn't know it until way late. One, if that's the case, then he's incompetent. I don't believe it. He knew it from the day one because the speculation on my part, I think this came out directly from the president to the attorney general. Let's try to grab people's guns, namely limit their rights to bear arms. Why? Try to demonstrate that most of the guns that are involved in crimes in Mexico come from U.S. gun stores. That's laughable on its face. Because, ladies and gentlemen, there are multiple nations, including Russia, China, nations in Europe that sell arms. Yeah, a good portion come from the United States, but not all of them, and certainly not a majority of them. It was a failed operation that had consequences, namely hundreds of people being killed. And I think that death count is going to go up, up, and up. And yes, our Congressional Oversight Committee looked into it, and he was cited, but the problem was he should have been fired. Fired. He wasn't fired. Why? Where did the idea from this project come from? When I heard Fast, I distinctly remember hearing for the first time about it. I couldn't believe it. I said, this is dumb. This is crazy. And the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, abbreviated the ATF, their own agents were saying, they were pleading with their executives or management, don't do this. Because once the shadow buyers bought these weapons, they either sold it to someone else in the United States or someone in Mexico. And the ATF agents could not follow them. And that's why this idea was crazy from the start. Nuts. And I've worked in government, and usually when you're in this kind of situation, it's the boss, it's the head guy who comes up with a real stupid idea, a real stupid idea. And instead of his subordinate saying, sir, this is a real stupid idea, instead of that, what do? They salute. Great idea, boss. Wish I had thought about it myself. And they execute it. Instead of doing what they should have said, Mr. President, don't do this. This will blow up in your face. People will get killed. And that's exactly what happened. It was incumbent upon Eric Holder, the attorney general, to tell the president that. He didn't do it. He went along with it. He saluted, and they executed Operation Fast and Furious. And people died. I don't think Operation Fast and Furious got a tenth of the media exposure that this one case did. Primarily, it was the new media, namely the blogosphere, YouTube, and Fox. And there were a few reports on CBS. that really exposed this. The crime here is the same attorney general that was responsible for Fast and Furious is still the attorney general. He's arguing against your rights to claim self-defense when you're attacked by criminals. That's what he's trying to do. You know, I am all for, completely for, the stand your own ground laws as well as the castle laws. The problem is we have a corrupt politicians, and many of them are in cahoots and bribed by criminals on the local level, and as a result, people are killed or victimized. They don't really care about the law-abiding citizen, no matter what race they are. Their main concern is taking away your ability to protect your own, yourself, as well as your family, as well as your own property, to defend yourselves in your own homes when they're broken into. No mention of the fact is because we have people that are armed, that many, many, many crimes are prevented. Because put yourself in the position of a criminal. He doesn't want to rob a house that he knows there are people in it that are armed. Ideally, he wants to go to the house or apartment where the person is not home and he knows that they don't carry arms. The last place he wants to go is to a home that's occupied with someone that is trained and has a weapon, whether it's a firearm, whether it's a pistol, a rifle, or a shotgun. Common sense. They can skip a dozen houses to find that one house that's maybe vacant. The person's on vacation. Instead, we have people in power, the president and his attorney general, that are trying to limit and constrain your rights to protect yourselves against the criminal element in society. Remember, you still have in the United States the rights to defend yourselves. Now, I want to get on to the race racketeering. I've already touched upon it, so I'm not going to spend that much time. I'm looking at the clock. I got about 10 minutes before I need to wrap it up. I find it despicable that we have race racketeers that are encouraging people in 100 cities to hold rallies this Saturday using the not guilty verdict in the George Zimmerman case as the reason to hold the rally, and urging the federal government to continue and prosecute George Zimmerman for so-called civil rights violations. It's bogus, folks. It's completely bogus. They won't let go. They won't let go. Why won't they let go? They need the black vote. It's very simple. It's not hard to understand. They need the black vote to keep voting for them. They need to incite their black base. You need us. You need a black president. You need Eric Holder, a black attorney general, because we'll protect you. We'll protect you from those white racist killers out there. No mention of the fact that most of the homicides today that are committed against blacks are over 95% are committed by blacks against blacks. That's a conversation that they don't want to have. And the media goes along with it. That's the real scandal here. We have race racketeers in cahoots with the corporate media, your major news networks, that won't cover this. And it's a network. It's cities. They will not cover this problem. Why? That's not the story they don't want to tell. They don't want to tell that the majorities of black families are single-parent families. There's no father and mother. That the black illegitimacy rates are sky high. Sky high. The family is being destroyed. And one of the consequences is we have a Trayvon Martin that ends up dead. Because he didn't have a mother and father living together. He didn't have a mother and father telling him it's wrong to attack people. It's the breakdown of the family. And it's largely responsible by those in the government that want you to be dependent upon the government. That's what they're selling to you. We'll provide you benefits. We'll provide you food stamps. We'll provide you a place to live. We'll provide you an income if you vote for me. Are they successful? Yes, this works. This is the Democratic Party and Barack Obama playing Santa Claus. Vote for me and we'll give you a benefit. We'll give you an Obama phone. There's a problem. The money is running out. A matter of fact, the United States is broke. We're approaching $17 trillion of debt. That's $17 billion. And the major drivers of this are entitlement spending and welfare spending. The checks ultimately are going to decrease and inevitably stop because we're broke. You don't believe it? Look at Detroit, what's happening today. They declared bankruptcy. That was a city in 1950 that was, in 1950, the United States was the most prosperous country in the world. And Detroit was one of the most prosperous cities in the world with a population approaching 2 million. Today, it's under 800,000. That's a city controlled by one party for over 50 years, the Democratic Party. That's a city that has rampant crime, rampant poverty, breakdown of the family. That's where the United States is headed if you buy into these what the race racketeers are selling you. They're trying to scare you. They're trying to divide and conquer. That's the political strategy, divide and conquer. The Democratic Party needs 95% of the black vote, or they never get elected to anything. That's why they're promoting this. Don't fall for it, folks. Don't fall for it, because it cost you money and it might cost you your life. You know, there's a gentleman that, I won't say his name, but he used to have a radio show here. Big Obama supporter. Big Obama supporter. Obama could do no wrong. And he kept saying, the Tea Party are a bunch of racists. The Tea Party are a bunch of racists. I looked at him and said, I'm part of the Tea Party. Most of the Tea Party members are former Democrats, former Republicans, and independents that are concerned that the federal government is spending way beyond the means of the American people. Way beyond the means. We're going to have another year of over $1,000 billion deficit, over $1 trillion deficit, the fifth one in a row. But that same gentleman happens to be black, comes in and complains, I can't find a job. Can't find a job. Can't find a job. Connect the dots. We have the highest teenage unemployment today in America. And it's the blacks and Hispanics primarily have much higher rates than the national average. Why? Because we have a government that's out of control, that has not balanced the budget. Instead, they're going the opposite way. The United States will be Detroit in 20 years, if not sooner. It's not sustainable, folks. Wake up. Don't fall for this race racketeering. Don't fall for this government dependency, because the money's not there. It's that simple. The reason they extended the unemployment to 99 weeks was to keep people from rioting. That was to pay you off. The problem is they're running out of money to pay you off. I'm not going to have time to cover the last. Well, I want to spend a minute on the very last segment, and I'll only spend a few minutes on this. In preparing this show, I was kind of curious what other homicides had happened during the same time period that the media was focusing all of its attention, like a laser beam on this Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman situation. There was a case of a 12-year-old white child. Beautiful picture of her face. She was killed by two black teenagers, choked to death. Do you know why they killed her? Over bicycle parts. Over bicycle parts. Now, let me say this. Do you know who turned the two black children, teenagers, in to the police? Their own mother. Their own mother. Now, where was their own mother when her two teenage sons were killing this 12-year-old? She was working out of town as a mortician. Now, I applaud what she did. But what was sad about this, and it's a recurring thing, there was no father in this situation. It was a single parent trying to support her family. But because of the breakdown of the family, her own children killed over bicycle parts. She had a bike that one of the teenage sons really liked. And they choked her and they put her in a dumpster. Do you know anything about this case? I didn't know anything about this case. It was only preparing this show that I ran across this. And I was stunned. And it was, I at one time lived in New Jersey. It was in a small town in New Jersey. And yes, all the people involved were minors. And yes, the two teenagers were arrested. I could not find, and I did a lot of research, literally this story died. Other than the local paper, you can't find hardly anything about the disposition of this case. at all. You know, immediately when it happened, yes, there was coverage. Afterwards, none. And this would be an ideal case to really focus on. Because what's going on here, it's a perfect example of what happens when you have a single parent and a breakdown in the family, and a real breakdown that you had two teenage sons that did not understand basically right from wrong and committed murder, and a girl was killed, 12-year-old girl. Look at the videos on that last segment. I don't have time to really get into it, but that's what really concerns me. Yes, we need a conversation about race in this country. Unfortunately, the people that say that don't want to talk about the real problem, that the government is destroying the family, and that we become more and more people are becoming more and more dependent upon the government and where that leads. It leads to exactly where Detroit is today. And with that, I'll conclude our program. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Next week, I promise I will not mention George Zimmerman verdict and what the race racketeers are doing. I'll get back onto the economic story because we have some breaking news. Next Friday, the federal government will be releasing the advanced estimate for what the GDP did in the second quarter. And if you've been listening to the shows, I think it's going to show that our economic growth is definitely below 2% and might even be between 0 and 1%. Thank you for listening. And now back to the music.